Professional sports have returned after a break, while players, particularly in the NBA, thought about and reacted to and dealt with their feelings about the police violence in Kenosha, Wisconsin, following the lead of the Milwaukee Bucks, as Kenosha is a suburb. And there are a lot of questions now from people about, well, what did they accomplish and what will they do next? I think they've done something quite significant, and there's a lot that most people can start to do. I'm Paul Cross, and you won't hear this on the news. This is episode 3 of my unscripted ad-lib series. You won't hear this on the news. Talking about events and issues related to the events that are in the news today in 2020. I think there's a great deal to be thought about and considered following the NBA break, particularly National Basketball Association. As I speak, the Toronto Raptors are playing their first game of their playoff series against Boston. I'll watch it later. I'm thinking about this right now. So the players and the coaches and the team owners have agreed and formed a group that will work for social justice, work toward ending systemic racism in all kinds of systems in the United States and in Canada, by extension and throughout. One of the first significant things they've announced is that arenas that are owned by the teams will be made available as voting centers in the November election in the United States. And individual coaches and players have connections and associations with other sports venues and arenas in their hometowns and other areas and places they live, and they'll try to extend it the same way. The Toronto Raptors, of course, cannot really say, come and vote at the arena we play in. However, I was hearing news this morning of the coach, Nick Nurse, saying that of the 650,000, approximately, Americans who live in Canada who are eligible to vote, only about 30,000 did in the last election. And so the Raptors will work to encourage American citizens in Canada who can vote to make sure they do. So there's a step toward political action. Now, there's much, much more that can be done, of course. And I think it's important to have a discussion about the idea of who should make things happen and what should be done and what venues, avenues in society should we be looking to effect change and places to go to cause change. Obviously, there are political changes that need to be made. There's a voting bill in the United States. There's a justice reform bill in the United States. There are reforms proposed in Canada. In Toronto, there's an examination of some of the procedures of the Toronto Police Service and through the Toronto Police Services Board. And there's some resistance there, and we can think about issues about how to get around that resistance. One of the things I think we can certainly discuss, but I think ultimately we need to accept as a starting point that there is, in fact, definitely a need for change, because there are very deep-seated and ongoing results and examples and episodes and instances and proof and evidence of systemic racism in all kinds of levels of Canadian society. And I think it's really significant that in May, when the story really started to take on more and more legs, particularly sparked around the uprising and reaction to what happened to George Floyd in the United States, a murder at the hands of police in broad daylight on video in Minneapolis. I think it's really significant to note that in mainstream media, which is much maligned by people who are ignorant about the news and who don't use mainstream media, the biggest organizations on the planet that have reporters on the scene, but maybe that's another story. My point is that it became very clear through the reporting in mainstream media that there is a recognition that, in fact, there is a problem of systemic racism. Now, talk shows, which are not news, they often talk about things related to the news, and they're often very opinionated. And the opinions often come from people who are very polarized and polarizing and not very open to other ideas. That's what makes them popular with people, because they are so stringent. And some people think they are right, and some people can't look away because, I can't believe this fool is saying this kind of thing in this day and age. But they hold the listener. It became very clear through the news that there is evidence, and it is, should be accepted as fact. There is systemic racism in Toronto and throughout Canada and throughout North America, and it has an ongoing daily negative impact on Black people and Indigenous people and other people of color. That's a really significant development. In the news, there is no longer need for debate. The news accepts there is systemic racism. And that's significant at this point in history, I believe. Now, what can be done by people in their daily lives to try to help make some change? We need change at all kinds of levels. There is systemic racism that can be identified in any institution, in business, in education, in politics, in public service, in healthcare delivery, in retail, in every aspect you can think of. You can find an element of it where you could improve things. Let's go back to the NBA for a moment, because I think there are other significant moves that can be made by the NBA and its committees, its Social Justice Committee, to have an impact in their communities. And one of the things I need to say before we get there is, it's up to people who are not Black people to come up with solutions. Black people need relief from the systemic racism. People who have other influence over systems that impose systemic racism need to make steps to make changes. What's the impact of a boycott by a sports team of missing a game? Maybe it gave some people who would have been watching the game some time to do something, to write something, to say something about something they know not to be right, and make a proposal as to how to change it. I think broadcasters missed a huge opportunity during the boycott. I don't like it typically when American network feeds are used on Canadian networks to fill in, for example, for the loss of a game, such as was happening on television sports channels during the boycott. Yes, there were some very moving stories told by Black players and coaches and former players and coaches in the NBA of awful things that had happened to them. But I think people are tiring of being asked to tell their stories, as I understand it. And what we need now is action. And the broadcasters, I think, could have had a perfect platform to use their sports talk time to have on the mayor, or the police chief, or the governor, or premier, or business leaders, university presidents, corporate presidents and vice presidents, to give them an opportunity to be put on the spot and say what changes they will make. Now, the NBA teams taking a boycott at a time when fans cannot go may have less of a financial impact on the businesses around them and their suppliers and such. It caused a problem with the programming, and certainly with the commercial time, I suppose, that was sold to be in the game. But there's the opportunity, one of them, I think, that could have been used to bring in some worthwhile discussion, some social discourse about the issues. I think the teams, suppose they had a boycott again. Suppose when they were playing, and we do have audiences going, fans able to go to games. What if a Wildcat boycott was announced for a one day? And a lot of people whose businesses make money on game days are affected. Excellent. There you go. The teams can say to their suppliers and to the people around them, we will not play until we think things here are right. We will not buy cups from that supplier for our arena this year until and unless we know that their employee policies and practices are all in line with what they should be. And their employees of color are treated as well as and paid as well as, etc. And treated with respect in the workplace by their employers. And on and on. I think it could cascade from there. What about police? The biggest issue, the biggest flashpoint, because this is where people are physically hurt and killed by racist actions within the one legal body, the one body in North American culture, society that legally carries loaded guns, is what I'm trying to say. Huge, huge issue. What, are police the only people on the planet who don't listen to the news and understand how the world around them is operating and changing? How can it be that these incidents keep happening? How does it just happen one after another? Well, all of these things are in the news and you're so aware of these things. How does some cop manage to somehow pull a gun and shoot a man 7 times in the back? Well, his children are sitting in the back seat seeing it. What is that? The police chief there, who has been in the news in the past over an incident related to racist activity, doesn't seem to see a problem other than crime. So I think it's great to have discussion about putting cameras finally on police in Toronto or in Peel region next to Toronto or in other cities across Canada and throughout North America. And it's great to talk about reforming police. The term defunding doesn't seem to be very productive or popular because people are afraid of what that means. But for example, we put $1.2 billion into policing in Toronto every year, and the police service is not legally accountable to the public for how it uses that money. That's wrong. That's just wrong. Police chiefs don't operate in isolation in their cities. They're social and influential people. What if there's a police chief who refuses to denounce racist activity by officers on his force? What if there's a police chief who won't fire a convicted racist cop? Maybe somebody at the country club where the police chief golfs and is thought to be quite the local stand-up character can move a motion saying, we need to revoke the membership of this chief. We can't have someone who presides over racist activity, who won't denounce it, being part of our organization. We can't have them here. What about businesses that offer first responder and police discounts? If your police association, the police union in your market, has not denounced racism or has protected cops who have done racist activity and have been caught at it, if they won't denounce it, maybe your business should end its first responders discount. See, you have to hit people where they live financially. I think that's part of the point that a lot of people are making. And they're saying, how do you do that? I think there are all kinds of creative ways to do it. Cops don't get a discount here anymore on food, on clothing, on cars, whatever. There's no discount for cops because the force you work for and your police association are willfully allowing systemic racism to go on by not condemning it and outing and relieving us of the cops who do it. Somebody's going to say, well, you can't do that because of the legislation that protects police or their union agreements. You know what? Every contract on the planet can be tested in court. It's been suggested, I should not say, the police chief Mark Saunders, who was Toronto's first black police chief, might have done something. He needed allies, probably, to help make some moves. But there's a cop in Toronto who's been convicted in a racist beating of a young black man. Now, the cop was off duty, but got to play cop when the police in the jurisdiction where he was doing this heinous thing came into play. He's been convicted and he's still on the force. He's still employed. The interim chief doesn't seem to have any public thought about what to do about that. Here's a thought. Fire him. I don't care what the union agreement says, and I don't care what labor law says when you have such a terribly wrong situation. The thing is, we fix things like this by taking them to court and testing them. And the police chief in Toronto could say to the cop he fires, if the cop threatens a lawsuit, so what? I've got a budget of $1.2 billion, Billy. You come and sue me. I'll see you in court. We are not having you or people who do the kinds of things you do in uniform with a gun on the streets in this city. We're not having it. So yeah, I'll see you in court, okay? And we'll work this out. A police union or association is going to have a wildcat or something, a strike over a situation like that? Really? You would strike to protect a convicted, violent racist in 2020? I don't think so. I don't think so. I'm really just getting started. What I'm trying to suggest is I believe that people in all kinds of walks of society have ways they could influence organizations they are connected with in their communities to take action to root out racism. You're on a committee at a public body. You ask them through a motion to do something about a particular incident of racism or issue you know to be an issue of racism within the organization. If they don't pass it, you go public. You go public with the organization and the people who would not support action against racism. We can't let people hide. It's time for people who can take action to use their influence. Some people will never speak up. Some people will never get it. Some people will always be afraid to speak up. Some people will feel it's not their place and they won't know what to do. But the rest, who can see a path, can and ought to do something. So while people are questioning in the preambles to the sports broadcasts, play-by-play broadcasts today, such as I heard, and such as was evident in some of the commentary and the play-by-play in hockey on the weekend, people who are questioning what can be done, I think here are some concrete ideas. These are some concrete ideas I think I've been proposing today. I've always said in my career in news and in my social activism, I suppose you could say, and volunteer service, those who can must. And it's time for that. You see something, you say something, if you have an idea that you think can make a change, you can and you must put it forward. That's what I'm thinking right now. And I know you won't hear this on the news.